We are Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
We started to get into therapy and spiritual direction with this Crosspoint ministry. We really began to practice basic things like Sabbath and solitude, started to heal in our marriage and then bring some of these basic spiritual practices into our life and our leadership. I mean, I remember like having to learn like how to talk about my emotions. I needed an emotion wheel to be able to just name basic emotions.
Sure.
So anyways, then there's the learning of, you know, relearning of Willard. I remember Nouwen being so instrumental for us.
Wow.
And then it was just a lot of like, okay, now how do we take this to our church?
Yeah.
But we really needed, you know, 4 or 5 years to do that work ourselves and learn how to, for me, it was like learning to be present, learning to have heart to heart conversations with my wife, learning to connect with my kids at a deeper level, stopping some of the ministry for Sabbath practice.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. On today's episode, we hear the second part of the conversation between Jay and Brandon Shields, the director of church formation at Practicing the Way. Let's listen in.
When did the spiritual formation questions, because there's a way to think about how mission communities work and what you're doing, that's basically just strategic.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be like this.
Yeah.
The kind of formation conversations are like a different, again, it's like another OS.
Yeah.
So how did that start to get into you?
Yeah, I would say the first, my gateway into it was Scazzaro's Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. So I went through a church planning cohort with a great organization called Fellowship Associates.
It was
really all focused on the interior life of the leader first, and then skills and strategy and stuff like that. So it was a really interesting combination of all my training in ministry had been theological, intellectual, like head, and then really hands and skills. I had nothing when it came to that, like below the line interior life stuff. And so I remember reading Scazzaro for the first time. And I remember opening up the first chapter, and it's like, you basically, you might, that checklist of you might be emotionally unhealthy if. And I remember just going through that in the cohort. We did a retreat together and walking through this with these guys. And there was a guy who sort of famous in our circles. Nobody really knows him, but his name is Jack Nicholson. And he's a leadership consultant and coach. And it's like, the if you've seen Jack, you know.
The puppets?
Yes. Yes. If you've done this, you know. If you don't know, you don't know. But Jack is this like gestalt trained psychologist, organizational consultant, spiritual formation guru who had trained these guys. And I remember him laying out, them laying out these four quadrants, head, heart, you know, mind, soul. And basically just talking through that in terms of your story. And I never told my story. I never even reflected on my story before. So we did this story work and we go on this retreat and we read this book. And I'm like, something's off. And the guys are saying like, something's off. Like when you're telling your story, there's such a disconnect, an attachment between what you're saying. And then like, they're asking me questions like, how do you feel? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I feel fine. It's just my story.
Yeah, right,
But they're like, there's a weird disconnect. And there's a moment where in this exercise, you go around and it's like, there's four chairs. And it's like, you're talking about your story. And like, what do you think Jesus would say to you in this moment? And I just remember like, I don't know.
You're just frozen.
Totally frozen. And I have, and I'm saying the words, but there's
I
not
think
a,
he'd say this, I guess.
But
it's not landing.
And it's very cerebral. And it's very like, you know, you're doing a good job or whatever, you know. But there was no connection in my heart. And I remember thinking, that's interesting. And that was the first crack for me. The second thing was we were struggling in our marriage. I mean, church planting just really crushed our marriage. I did not lead well from, you know, making the decision to move was out of a cutoff, a relational cutoff, really in a lot of ways with our mentors. We had this huge breakup. I think they felt betrayed that we wanted to plant a church and they sort of put an ultimatum to us and we had to move and it was super, super painful. And all of a sudden we're in this place where we have no friends.
That's and it's not working.
And it's not working. There's a lot of stress on our marriage. And we are just, I mean, fighting and mostly me just not being a great husband. I mean, we did this really quickly. I didn't really think through like community. I was not emotionally present. I'm traveling a lot, you know, doing this church planning residency. My wife is just feeling so lonely. And I think just feeling like, what are we doing here? And and this is sort of like my fault. Like I did this. And so for 5 years. I mean, we're just like, it's the worst our marriage has been. I mean, we've been married at that time 8, 9, 10 years, and we're at the lowest sort of point. And I remember being invited onto a retreat with a group of pastors who were in this sort of stream that we were checking out. It was like this Reformed Baptist, but with Soul Care. It's Harbor Network is the name of the network. And so these two men are at this retreat from a ministry called Crosspoint, and they do Soul Care for pastors. And so I remember, never forget, my wife and I go on this retreat thinking we're joining a church planning network, and they do this incredible talk on the wish dream of ministry, using Bonhoeffer's kind of wish dream thing, and basically just start to deconstruct this this sort of achievement-oriented framework, and really start to get into the soul and the heart, and how this idealism that we come with in ministry in our marriage. And I remember my wife and I, and so they were really raw, just like sharing their own pain, sharing their own story, their own failures. They had been church planners. And I remember my wife and I just going, we've never heard somebody talk about their brokenness and pain like that before. Like, honestly, like that, in just a raw way. And we're like, whatever they're doing, we need that.
That's cool. It was attractive.
100%. Well,
what's so poignant about moments like that is people either run toward or away.
Right.
Like right now. Yeah. Like I'm sure there were maybe even in that room, people were like, I don't know what that is. But we're not doing that. Like because if I open that door, I don't know what's going to crawl out. And I might not be able to get it back in.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting that the Lord had dealt with you enough.
We were ready. We were so broken.
That's right.
We had no option. It almost felt like this is somebody just threw us a life raft.
Yeah, that's cool.
And the only thing we could do is grab onto it. And so long story short, we started to get into therapy and spiritual direction with this Crosspoint ministry.
That's great.
We really began to practice basic things like Sabbath and solitude, started to heal in our marriage, and then bring some of these basic spiritual practices into our life and our leadership. I mean, I remember like having to learn like how to talk about my emotions. Yeah. I needed an emotion wheel to be able to just name basic emotions.
Sure.
And so anyways, then there's the learning of, you know, relearning of Willard. I remember Nouwen being so instrumental for us.
Wow.
And then it was just a lot of like, okay, now how do we take this to our church?
Yeah.
But we really needed, you know, 4 or 5 years to do that work ourselves and learn how, for me, it was like learning to be present, learning to have heart-to-heart conversations with my wife, learning to connect with my kids at a deeper level, stopping some of the ministry for Sabbath practice. I mean, I remember just practicing solitude.
Yeah.
I had an anxiety attack the first time I ever had a day of solitude.
Most do.
And I thought I was dying.
Yeah. Most do. I mean, that's my experience. I mean, you work with a lot of people too. I mean, specifically driven pastor types will often have, if not a panic attack, something very close to it.
Yeah.
Or they'll just literally just leave the experience like an hour and a half in. They're like, nah, I'm out, because they can tell if I don't, I'm going to have a panic attack, which kind of counts as having a panic attack in a certain sense. But okay, so you just fall headlong through all this.
Yeah.
And of course, then I assume your church starts to experience that kind of change.
Yeah, I think the people closest to us, we started to really pull them in more organically at first, just, you know, going to conferences or reading books together, trying on some of these practices.
And people are basically like, this is cool.
No, absolutely not. They're like, this is insane. This is crazy. I mean, we're in an evangelical, formerly Baptist.
Are we heretics?
Exactly.
This might be heresy.
People are like, you are crazy. Right. Is this Catholic? You know, Buddhist? Totally.
You know, the devil is in your emotions. I
mean, this,
we're truth people.
Yeah.
We're not. Yeah. All that stuff.
All that. So we're met with some pretty serious resistance.
I bet.
You know, when we started to, I started to preach on it, we started to get, I mean, there was two things happening. It's like you said, some are like, oh my gosh, thank you for naming something I've been waiting for. Like just language for the interior journey, the critical journey. I mean, one of the early books that I read, and just being able to give language to the spiritual journey. Yeah. It was so freeing and liberating for some. And then for others, I mean, and including some of our best friends started to move away from us and leave the church.
Totally.
And so over a couple of years, we slowly started to, I mean, for me, it was trying to do this with our leadership community, which with mixed results.
Sure.
While we were also multiplying, and we planted 5 churches in 5 years, which is stupid.
Yeah.
Too fast. But, you know, as my wife likes to say, sometimes my strategy gets out ahead of my emotions and my ability to relationally.
True.
And so it's messy. We're doing some of it in the church. I'm preaching sermon series. We're running cohorts. My wife's doing soul care training, and we're leading retreats. So we're just, again, just doing it. We don't know a church that's even doing this.
Totally.
So we're just making it up. We're like, well, Pete said this, so let's try it and see how it goes.
Yeah.
It was a lot of trial and error and experimentation.
So if, because now you're doing versions of this for with Practicing the Way for other churches, if you could go back and talk to yourself, what would you say to yourself about change agency? Because, you know, we experience these kinds of things all the time as leaders. The reason often we end up being leaders is we go first.
Yeah.
We might not be even the smartest. Being honest, like we just do it first. And so then people are like, oh, well, I guess we'll do that. And then people are doing it. And then you do another thing. And people are like, okay, so we'll do that too. And next thing you know, you've got a few hundred people walking down an alley with you that you don't know where it ends, which is not a great way to lead, by the way. But it's really common.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's really common.
Yeah.
And so as leaders lead in the manner you're describing, you learn things about change agency usually too late. Mm-hmm. Like, that was too fast, or that wasn't clear, or I don't even know if I believe that anymore. And I already took people.
Yeah.
So what would you say about that? Because a lot of pastors swing. Like I'm a weird charismatic, right? So we'll show up in churches, talk about hearing the voice of God, pray for some folks, somebody gets healed. And some poor pastor's like, I'm done with whatever I've been doing. You know, my denomination's stupid. I'm chasing the Holy Spirit. I'm like, whoa, no. We love the Bible. You know, stay, stay grounded.
Yeah.
You know, let's do this in a very particular way. You have to, you know, shepherds don't jump over chasms. They walk people through them.
Yeah.
Can I help you think about it? So what do you think you learned out of that? Like if you could look back.
Yeah.
Because a lot of pastors are waking up to the kinds of things we're describing.
Yeah.
What would you say about, you wish you could have done differently about change agency?
Yeah. I mean, I was so impatient. You know,
which is ironic. I'm so impatient about the formation.
Yes.
Yeah, perfect.
No, but it's like when you, it's like anything, when you first jump into it, it's so transformative that you just want to bring everybody in. And I'm an extremist personality. So when I get into something, I'm burning the boats and there's no going back and we got to be there now. And so I think I experienced some early significant growth. Like I was plateaued really in my own, my own spiritual development and maturity, especially emotionally and relationally. And I went just so fast. There was so much growth.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to bring everybody along with me. And so I think the first thing is just the pace of change is slow. And I mean, like we know that intellectually, but to like live it in our bodies and like experience a calm and a peace and like my nervous system, it took so long to like reset the internal pace that I just wanted to implement things. Yep. And so we
just used to it.
It's like 2015, 2016, 2017, we're seeing these gaps. We did a health survey in the church and we saw that, okay, the church is somewhat of a reflection of us in terms of the same kind of brokenness, you know, and the same gaps.
That is a horrible learning as a leader.
So humbling, humiliating.
It's all the time.
Yeah. But I'm like, all right, now let's go. The elders are like, all right, can you help us figure out how we're going to do this? So I go away and I strategize and I come back and then we're planting churches and it's complex. And so we develop a sort of a vision and we preach a sermon series. And I think the step that we really skipped, at least in my mind going back, is like one, it's too fast. Like we've got to slow down like 3x what we think we need to slow down. You know, whatever you think the time scale is, just extend it double or triple. And that has to be like a felt experience of a leader where like I need to feel differently and I need to slow down my mind and my heart. And then I think really just we skipped the teamwork. I mean, we were doing the work as a team, but it was sort of like, you're either for this or not, you know? And I think I was confused that people were confused.
Right.
I was confused that they didn't get it first pass. Like we read this Willard book and what do you mean you don't get this?
Totally.
And I was trying to rush people's process. And I think it just created this stress for the team. It created a shame dynamic where it's like, I'm not good enough. I'm not doing this enough. I'm not meeting, you know, Brandon's expectations or standards. And And so I think there was just, it was a pressure cooker of like, yeah. we really want to get this right. And we really want to do this as a church. And we were all on the same page on that. But I think slowing down to like really pay attention to the quality of the relationships. I mean, I come from a detached family system.
Right.
And my wife comes from a more of an anxious family system. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, like the ideas, it's like, if they get the ideas.
Yeah, let's go.
We're good.
Right.
And I think, man, there's so much care that was needed, so much empathy that was needed. I mean, we have people coming from crazy stories with their families of origin.
Yeah.
And just recognizing like, this is a 10-year journey. And if we can take a more incremental approach and really just walk with them, I just think I didn't have the depth of heart to really have the compassion, I just didn't know what I didn't know at that point, you know, but I wish that as a team, we had really spent a season before 2 or 3 years of living that together and experiencing that kind of transformation together before we then rolled it out to the church. And that's what I try to teach now is
take your time
with your team, especially like if there's not a leadership team that's living this deeply together, it's not going to be sustainable when it gets rolled out to the church. Cause you need mothers and fathers who've lived this. So that, you know, when somebody from your church comes and they're experiencing this, it's like, who are they going to go to? They're going to go to your team.
Yes.
And if the team's not on the same page and living this out, then it's dead in the water.
You know? And practically, they can't all come to you. So and so you need a team, at least just practically, if not, you know, culturally. There's a story almost nobody tells about John Wimber because it's a little counter to how people understand the Vineyard. That I love. It's one of my favorite ones I've heard of him where, you know, the Vineyard's we're children of the church growth movement.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just who we are. So Wimber is doing this seminar, bunch of pastors. And the one pastor says, I got a question. Gets up and he says, you know, I've done all the things you're selling to do. It's not working. Our church isn't growing. The things aren't going the way they're supposed to go. And it's getting agitated. Like, you know, I've been to all the conferences. I mean, I've done the small groups. I'm doing this. We did the sermon, the kingdom, and we did the thing. Da, da, da. And John's just kind of like listening to him, just kind of quietly. And the guy's getting more and more riled up as he's talking. You know, it's like Q&A's in the middle of the room. And the people I know that were there were like getting more agitated. Like, somebody turn this guy's mic off or something. We've all been in Q&A like this. and somebody said, what's the question? He goes, well, what do you want to say? What do I do? And John just kind of leaned back and looked at him and said, well, how many more like you do you want? And the guy just like leaned forward and goes, none. He's like, well, why don't you work on that? He goes, and then do some of that with your wife.
Yeah.
And then do some of that with a few friends.
Yeah.
And then you'll start to build like a way of life with God that people will kind of like want.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
If you don't even want the life that you have with God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would anyone else?
Yeah.
What kind of technique are you trying to build and for what purpose?
Yeah.
And. Talk about a straightforward question for about every leader and pastor.
Yeah.
I mean, like, do you want what you have?
Yeah.
Because if you don't, tell me what you're doing again. Like, what is this? What do you think you're doing? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like, do I believe it's true?
Yeah.
That's a different question.
Right.
We all believe things are true.
Yeah. And
I believe I shouldn't ever eat fried food again. That's probably true, but I eat it. So, I mean, like, that is such a difficult process. Mm-hmm. And to go, okay, so you're doing all of that. You wish you could have done it differently, but you do what you did. You start to see transfer. You're planting 5 churches in 5 years. Yeah. What in the world makes you shift to this job then? Why do you do this?
Yeah. COVID was really hard. I mean, COVID, that's like the answer to everything.
COVID assisted, right?
Okay. No, I mean, I think I always struggle with like, I like to start things.
Yeah.
I never had a vision for ending things though. Yeah. You know, like in planting, there's always that robust
That's a really helpful vision
for like thinking about starting things, but nobody ever teaches you like all these things will eventually come to an end, right? Whether it's voluntary or involuntary, you will one day set this down.
Yeah.
And I think I was feeling even 5-6 years in, like this stirring, and I have an apostolic gifting. I'm a teacher and apostolic, sort of my primary gifts. And if you think about APES, and you know, so we were multiplying churches, but I always like had this sense of like, am I the long-term guy? Am I going to be the guy that is here 20 or 30 years? I don't know that I will be, but I have no idea.
Right.
I would have no idea how to stop, number one. And number two, I don't have like a backup plan, you know,
if what would I do?
Right. Pastors end up getting out of ministry and they end up doing whatever, leadership coaching real estate, or whatever, commercial insurance.
Right.
But I was feeling the stirring and some of the restlessness, even in like, you know, 2018, 2019, 2020. And then COVID happens and man, we just 2020 and 2021 just, I mean, it just literally about killed me. I mean, we were not a huge church. Right. We had three churches. We separated the churches out. We had just particularized or like separated these three churches out. Literally the month COVID hit,
dude,
we separated our three churches.
That's brutal.
So we'd been going through all this change and transition already.
And now
we had gone to formation, a formational model. So people are mad and leaving the church. And, and there were good things happening too, but there was a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Then COVID hits. And in a place like Indianapolis, where you have such a polarized conservative, progressive dynamic, right? A very conservative state, a very progressive city, and all the things that are happening politically. I mean, I was the only full-time staff member at the end of that transition. We had given everything away to the other churches. So it was me and a part-time worship person.
And you caught on fire.
And then one of my wife and one of our best friends, it was basically it ended up being just the three of us.
Wow.
And man, that 2 years of just trying to hold the church together. I mean, we lost 50%, 60% of the church.
Yeah. Like pretty much everybody.
Yeah. And then, and then all of a sudden we get to the end of 21 and all of a sudden people are starting to come and we're growing again, but it's like a whole new church.
Yep.
And I get to the end of that year and I'd had the first, I mean, I had no concept of burnout or depression and I hit the wall.
Yeah, I bet.
And I was like, man, I don't know if I want to be a pastor. I feel like I'm a bad pastor. So much shame of just feeling like I've really disappointed everybody in COVID. Yeah. And so I just had a massive burnout. And so I began to talk to my spiritual director about, is this the right thing for me? Do I need to think about a different career or change? And he's like, just be patient. Like take 2022 and let's just explore. Let's just see what God has for you. Yeah. Don't rush through this. Like this is part, you know, he always would say to me, like, the greatest gift you can give your people is your transformed and transforming presence.
Yeah, I agree.
And he said, this is part of your transformation. So just wait patiently and see what God opens up. And so that year was the year that Practicing the Way started. So John Mark was transitioning out of Bridgetown and they had a pilot church program and they said, hey, if you're interested in running the resources, you know, we're going to do a call.
Yep.
And so my spiritual director was like, hey, you should just be open. Like they threw out this part-time job. They said, hey, if anybody's interested in taking what they've learned as a pastor in formation and helping other pastors do that, we'd love to, we're hiring a part-time role.
Yeah.
And so I said, all right, I'll just see, I'll throw my name in the hat and see if it works. And 3 months later, I had this job. It was just supposed to be kind of a day a week. John Mark kind of teased and was like, I don't even know if we'll have more than a few dozen churches that are interested in this Practicing the Way thing. And 400 signed up for the pilot program.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, wow, this is going to be a big job.
One day a week. Cool.
But I think for me, it was like, I was at this season of life where I was like, I've learned so many lessons over the past 25 years of pastoral ministry, but specifically over the last 15. I really would love to be able to offer up some of the things that I'm learning to other pastors. You know, Arthur Brooks has that great, if you've read From Strength to Strength, he talks about second half of life being about crystallized intelligence, where like, it was just wisdom. You're offering up wisdom to others that you've learned. And I felt like this was my invitation to be able to share out some of the things that I had learned to other pastors and really to create just a learning community was my vision for my role at Practicing the Way. I told John Mark and our executive director, I said, I would love to be able to just start a small learning community where a group of pastors can feel seen, they can feel loved, and we can go on this journey together and we can help learn together what it looks like to do the work of formation in local churches.
That's so great.
Okay. But I wasn't going to leave the pastor at that point. I mean, I was thinking still.
But let's try to land here. You give me a ton of time, but I want to So you've been in this role how long?
Part-time for 3.5 years, and then I just came on full-time last year.
Great. So you thought you were doing one job. This is usually how jobs like this work when you're starting, and now you're probably doing a different kind of job.
Yeah.
What have you learned about doing this work? What has surprised you about the churches that you're working with?
Yeah.
What are obstacles you were like, I didn't see that coming, and what's just gone better than you would have imagined?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest surprise has just been how many churches are interested.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I've been shocked.
It's a move of the Spirit. I mean, we're talking about that, this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the Spirit is moving. Now, if you're in the more conservative circles, you might think that's the spirit of the age or something. But if you, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
But because you have to make sense of the phenomena.
Yeah.
Of how many churches, how many pastors are asking the same questions?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, exactly. So, I mean, thousands of churches.
Yeah.
I mean, just 3 years in, 20,000 churches that are just running our resources. And that's not even including the ones that we don't know about.
Right.
And so I think that hunger has shocked me. I think it's been pleasantly surprising, like surprising in a good way. Yeah. Most churches are just early on.
Yep.
And so I think this is such an emerging movement. And I think it's good to name that because most pastors show up in spaces like this feeling behind.
Yeah.
Feeling like I'm not doing good enough or I'm not doing enough.
Totally.
And I think there's a camaraderie and a solidarity. And like we are all so early on,
we're
all experimenting. We're all figuring it out. And so that's been, I think, a really good thing to just kind of name for people that are wanting, you know, we're so used to thinking in campaigns as pastors, I'm going to do this campaign for 2 years and we're going to fix this thing. And then we're going to, and I think for pastors, it's like, no, this is the work.
Yep.
This, the spiritual formation, the process of becoming a person of Christ-like love, it is the work of the church. This is what Paul talks about. This is what Jesus, this is what we're doing. And this is going to take the rest of our lives. And so I think we've just noticed what I think was so encouraging to me was the journey that we had been on and what you've been on, where the starts in the life of a leader, right? Like I am learning to become a more contemplative pastor in the best sense of that word, you know, to have a deep life with God where I'm coming alive to and just being awake to the presence of God in my life and his deep work of forming me into a person of love, like that personal journey. And then taking that to your team and your leadership and living that together and expanding our pastoral imagination together for what could be. And then the journey of getting that into our church, right? We're learning that it's like our church has to change, right? Like Willard said, this is never going to be more than a trend if we don't get it into the way we do church.
Yes.
And so it's not rocket science, right? Mm-hmm. It's not hard, but it is so complex and it requires an incredible amount of humility, incredible amount of patience, an incredible amount of perseverance, right? Yeah. But it's like kind of, in some ways, it's simple. It's like, do this with your team. Work on a discipleship pathway where you're actually like taking people to the deep end of the pool from exploring to following Jesus.
Yep.
Have some shared practices that you're doing in your church.
Yeah.
Rethink your small groups as a place, not just of belonging or even just mission, which was our background, but as a place of deep formation that leads to mission.
Yep.
You know, it's not like hard, but it is for pastors. I think it's just a completely different paradigm for how we think about ministry. It's less up and to the right, more wilderness, more journey of descent. But it's also like incredibly meaningful. I think what I have found for pastors and for myself is when you begin to rethink church like this, all of a sudden you're thinking beyond scale, success, status, speed, programs. You're thinking about the soul of your church and the soul of your people and being able to help people, like real marriages, real people. When you see that begin to take root in your church and you see, you hear the stories. I mean, people, there was a 65-year-old man in the last class we did in our church before I transitioned out. And he said in the middle of our just very first session on following Jesus, he's like, I'm 65 years old. I've been a Christian most of my life. And I never knew this is what following Jesus meant.
Wow.
And he's like in tears and his son goes to our church and his grandkids go to our church. And it's like, that, I mean, the richness of the meaning for pastors, when I think about the burnout rate and what, you know, 50% of pastors or 40% or whatever the stat was during COVID, like thinking, do I want to be a pastor?
Totally.
Like that's it. Like that's That's what we're doing as pastors. That's why I got into ministry. That's why you got into ministry. Yep. We want to help people and we want to see them grow and change. And so I think we're learning all kinds of great things about how transformation happens in individuals and in the church. And I think learning that, you know, this is a mysterious process. There's no one size fits all algorithm, but there are some reliable patterns to use Willard's terminology, and being able to create a community and curate some resources where pastors can come in and they can learn together, you know, some basic principles and processes and things that are helping other pastors in that work. And then seeing that transformation happen. I feel like, you know, somebody said this morning at the conference, spiritual formation is the most attractional thing happening in the church right now. And I really do believe, when you think about the future of the church, for pastors in terms of their motivation for ministry, and the next generation, my kids, your kids, the rising generation, this is the cry of the heart, is for a deep encounter with God and a transformation that goes beneath the veneer of religion and really touches the core of who they are and who they're becoming. To me, that's the great pastoral task of this next generation, you know? And so I'm just excited about like doing this with other pastors like you and just learning together. I mean, we're just getting started, and it's so fun to think about the possibilities.
What inspires me about some of the work you're doing, it's the same experience I had when I first started to read Willard and Foster and those guys. It's probably, I mean, I wasn't raised in church like you, so I shouldn't be embarrassed by this, but I remember feeling embarrassed reading Willard and Foster and realizing they're not actually saying anything that hasn't been said a lot for a really long time, grounded entirely in the life of the ministry of Jesus and the history of the church over time. You know, there's a way of thinking about this stuff we do as though you need like a really new, cool angle because the world's changing so much. You know, we need different kinds of words and we need different kinds of packages. And there's a way of seeing this work that way, that a lot of even the megachurch movement stuff was built in that. We're going to do things in a way have never been done. Like this isn't your grandma's church kind of vibe, you know? Which the Lord has given great favor to. So I would not speak poorly of it. But what struck me as I started to read, you know, specifically the Renovare resources, I was like, they actually didn't write anything here. They're like compiling other things people have been saying. And then trying to like gently say, well, what would this look like for you as a pastor? Or what would this look like in your marriage? Or what would it be like in your schedule? And I remember that just feeling so convicting. Like there's been these wells, these reservoirs just around that somebody just put some rocks over. We can just remove those rocks. The Streams of Living Water, Foster's book, was so convicting to me. This is old. This is like really simple. And so what I appreciate about your work, as I'm experiencing Practice Wave in this week, it just keeps saying, what if we just helped you curate like all these different things that we found to be helpful and walk you through a process? So it's not newfangled, tricky, whiz-bang deal. It's like, you know, there's some ways that this helps.
When I think you asked about the obstacles, I do think that is one of the dangers right now, is that it's becoming a fad and cool. And I think that is one of my big concerns for the future of spiritual formation, is it just becomes about the disciplines and your solitude time, or or it's your it's a church growth strategy. It's the new church growth strategy. You know? And I think it's like, man, if this isn't painful, if this isn't really painful and hard for you, I'm concerned. And again, not because it, like, it can be successful in the sense that I'm seeing churches grow, but this is not a move to church growth. It's a move to church health. It's a move to pastoral health. And usually there's like the J curve, you know, it's like the dip. And so I think that's a big challenge for pastors, is like, you've got to create the space. And it's like a completely different way of imagining your ministry, and it's going to just take time. And so you don't rush. And expect resistance. Like you should expect resistance in your own soul.
Yourself.
You're not going to like this.
Yes.
You should expect resistance in your marriage, with your family, with your roommates, if you're single or whatever. And you should expect some resistance in your church. Like it's going to be hard, and there are going to be people that leave. And there's going to be people that start to, weirdly now post-COVID, there's people that start to come to our church for the wrong reasons yes. because it's cool. And you're going to have to watch out for that.
Well, and everything turns into an idol, to your point. I mean, every single good thing can be turned into an idol. You know, there's a way that in the, I mean, we're in Denver, the self-enhancement world is so prevalent.
Yeah.
Biohacking and all these things. There's a way to say, okay, now I have a Sabbath mixed in with my cold plunge and my essential oils.
Yeah.
And my Reiki. And then I also really love being in this accountability group this church started. Okay. There's something fundamentally wrong there.
Yeah.
Because they're using another kind of frame.
Yeah.
And just finding kind of Christian mysticism as a means of solving another problem.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
And these things are really old.
Yes.
They've been practiced for a very long time. With a lot of really good fruit. So
yes,
we can be freaked out. I mean, the amount of people in our church showed up. Well, isn't this Eastern mysticism?
Yeah.
You're talking about breathing. I was like, well, I don't know. Where do you think breathing comes from? Like who made that? Like, I think God did that. Yeah. And this is kind of an old practice. This is really old.
Yeah.
And this isn't like a new cool thought. And it's not rooted in Southeast Asia. It's rooted in biblical history.
Yes.
So, but some of that reimagining from both sides, calling some of our mystical types to into the way of Jesus that is railed in a particular way.
Yeah.
But those who have been so railed in into their tradition that they can't see the breadth of the biblical and church history.
Right.
That's a real, you got a hard job, man.
Well, it's fun. I mean, I think that's one of the things I love about my job is we just get to tell really great stories from the global church and then from the great tradition.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could include the great tradition, the global church, the ancient church,
but totally.
Just telling those stories, reintroducing old ideas to people is, it's like you said, it's not rocket science, but it's all there for us. We just are curating.
You got to curate it.
And then telling the stories to spark people's imagination to say what I've inherited and the way I have an imagination.
Yeah.
What I've inherited is not the only way to see the world. I've got to let God expand my imagination. And then integration and just helping church. I think that's the biggest challenge for most churches.
How do you do this?
Right? How do you move from like Willard's ideas to like, he wasn't working this out really in the church. And so how do we integrate this into our church? And that's a lot of, I mean, that's the stuff that's been for me so fun, helping pastors think about how do we bring this into our teams? How do we create exercises and tools and resources and relational things for people to just begin to practice this in real life? And that's the fun part of my job.
So. Well, I've taken a lot of your time. I am super grateful for your humility, the humility of the team.
Yeah.
I've seen you guys are just like, we just want to help. And so means a lot to me. I know lots of vineyard churches. We've talked about cohorts that different vineyard ABCs across the country. Lots of vineyard churches are using the material you guys are building. I'm really, really grateful for your work.
Yeah, thank
you. Very generous.
Thank you guys. Just I know there's a lot of this vineyard listeners here, but you guys have been so generous in giving your time to our cohorts. And we got to tell some of the story of Mile High today. So if you haven't seen that story,
that was cool.
Make sure to check that out. But it's a really beautiful partnership, and we're grateful to be able to work with you guys.
Well, we'll throw a bunch of stuff in the show notes. People can look at who you guys are and what you do. But I'm really grateful. Hopefully we'll get more time another time so I can bother you about more stuff.
Thank you. Okay. Bless you.
Thanks, man.
What if the communities you're building could only be as healthy as you are? Better Together is back, and this year we're going deeper. Join Vineyard USA Associations July 21st through 23rd at North Jersey Vineyard for a transformational gathering where beloved community meets emotionally healthy leadership. Featuring Drew Hyun from Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, you'll discover how to lead from wholeness instead of woundedness and build communities where people don't just attend, they truly belong. This isn't just another conference. It's a reset for your soul and a vision for the community God's called you to lead. Early bird pricing is available through May 4th. So don't wait. Learn more and register today at bettertogether.vineyardusa.org. We'll see you there.